creative journey. It's easy to get lost, but don't worry, you'll lift off. Sometimes you just need a creative pep talk.
Hey, you're listening to Creative Pep Talk, a weekly podcast companion for your creative journey. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. I'm a New York Times bestselling author and illustrator, and this show is everything I'm learning about building and maintaining a thriving creative practice. How do you get off the treadmill as an artist? You know, the treadmill of forever chasing trends. How do you transcend that and make something more timeless? This episode is for you if you need some ideas on how to tap into a more timeless sense of yourself, if you can't figure out what's you and what's just you trying to be cool, or you need help breaking free from your creative influences in a major way by finding something truly unique about you that can help you build a more unique creative sensibility. About halfway through, I will give you a creative thought experiment that broke open my creative sensibility early on. Then I'll have a chat with Sophie and talk about how that applies to her creative practice. And if you stick to the end, I'll give you a hint of what we're gonna dive into in the next episode and a little taste of what's to come. But for now, let's talk about whether or not you're playing it too cool to make anything personally meaningful or to make art at all. Really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Quick heads up, there is a little adult language in this episode. If you are sensitive to that or listening with kids that might be sensitive to that, there will be two S words coming your way, and consider yourself warned. Unlike the vast majority of most episodes of this show, this isn't fully self-contained and will work a lot better and make more sense if you go back and listen to part one first, which is episode 449, the one that came right before this in this podcast. So start there if you're just tuning in. This is episode 2 of Right Side Out, our new series all about how to make work you love that's, more importantly, authentic. Last week in episode 1 of this series, we explored how masking or pretending to be somebody you're not to show up appropriately to a society that wasn't built with you in mind can cause you to lose a sense of your true self. So now, ahead of us in this series, we have the difficult work of peeling back these masks that we wear and rediscovering who we are underneath all of that. This week, we're going to take this a little bit further forward, or rather take it back. A lot further back, all the way back to who you were as a kid. I think you can learn a lot about who you are by looking at who you were before you started having the self-awareness that led to self-consciousness, that led to pretending and hiding until you lost a sense of self completely. Okay, this is all getting a little bit Christopher Nolan timeline, mixing up, jumping, etc. But here's what I'm saying. To become a future you that is truly authentic, your present self might need to go back and touch base with your past self. So at this point in my life, I've been doing illustration for about 15 years. When I got started, like most creative people, I really wanted to find an authentic style and make work that I loved that felt super me, but also super cool. But I was also aware that those two things might be mutually exclusive. Like the work might not be able to be me and also be cool and interesting at the same time, because I'm not sure those really fit. So instead of trying to pour myself into it, I just started making stuff that was kind of trendy. And although at that moment, I think it was probably okay, maybe what I needed to do, when those trends dried up, I was stuck right back where I was before I got started with no real sense of who I was as an artist or as a person. I was very frustrated, like felt like I might never figure this out. I had really loved the doodly, psychedelic, trendy thing that I was working in, and I was mashing that up with the other thing I really loved at the time, which was silkscreen band posters with their limited color palettes. But when the world started to move on, I too started feeling less interested and connected to those things aesthetically. And I felt like I was a product of the times and stuck in this moment, and I was unable to tell like what part of this is actually me and what part of it is just me trying to be something I'm not, trying to be cool. I wanted to find a deeper connection to the work that went beyond the surface of the aesthetics and popular styles and had a more timeless connection to who I was as a person. There's a question that's attributed to Charles Bukowski that I think gets at what I was trying to work through in that moment. And he says, "Can you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be?" And honestly, I really couldn't. In my early 20s, as I became a young dad and tried to build a career to support us all, looking for more timeless inspiration, I spent gobs of time digging into the quote-unquote guilty pleasures of my childhood. Things like Fraggle Rock and Charlie Brown, stuff like that. Not stuff that I would say I actually felt guilty about. They were more just things that weren't part of the current cultural zeitgeist of the moment, or as immediately interesting as the current movies I was watching or the bands I was listening to or the artists that I was following. But I knew there was something back there that I was missing. As I've gone to record podcast episodes to reveal the conclusion of this style research, behind the scenes in recent times, the me in my mid-30s now went beyond this creative prompt and into my real life as I decided to take a deeper dive into the complex relationship to myself and where I came from. And I don't just mean from a distance, not just revisiting these memories, but actually getting up close and personal. I had conversations with friends and families and therapists and psychologists, some of which were actually recorded, and I will be sharing them in clips and pieces as we move through this. But I have to say, honestly, it's been a pretty intense personal journey to try to find and heal my childhood self. And it wasn't always easy. And honestly, I wasn't always doing okay. So why would I share all this with you? Well, I've used this podcast to explore for 10 years now how we can find ourselves creatively and make quality work inspired by and in tandem with who we uniquely are. And I hope that by sharing this more personal story of growth and self-discovery, that you might even start to see yourself more clearly and maybe even love yourself a bit better and ultimately make work that's more timelessly you.
Driving to see my mom for the first time in a few years.
And you're left alone on a plane, coming home from a place with a name and a day and one heavy heart hemorrhaging.
Feels like the return home.
Look where you're going, bud. It's good stuff. Up here. Oh, okay. Good stuff.
So to better illustrate what I mean, I think I got to go all the way back to my past and all the way back to a magical time known as the 90s. I grew up in a simpler time. The 90s were just a lot more simple. Back then, we didn't have endless content across 10 streaming platforms and YouTube and TikTok. We didn't have 1,500 Pokemon. For the most part, as far as I could tell, you were either a nice, clean Disney kid or a weirdo, crusty, slimy Nickelodeon kid. Now, probably from the whacked out theme music and the podcast art alone, you can probably guess that I was a Nicktoons kid.
Nickelodeon!
Here's a little clip from a chat with my older brother, Josh, where we were discussing childhood on the phone one day last year.
You know, go back to you as a kid and how goofy and like different that you were. And like, obviously that comes from her, right? Like she's got all that energy. And so the memories I have of you are like endearing. I mean, you were annoyed that shit out of me as a kid, obviously, in those times, but you know, yeah. Dancing like an idiot at a basketball game and not watching the game, you know, all that stuff is like probably a good microcosm of our childhood. But
all right, there might be one little piece that stood out there that I didn't set up yet. You might have even caught that little bit of conflict in his voice when he said it. He said, obviously that comes from her, our mom. As a kid, I couldn't have been more proud of where this goofy, slimy weirdness came from because my mom was my favorite person in the whole universe. When I was really little, nearly everybody in my life would tell me that I was just like my mom. You're just like her. Nothing made me happier because to me, she was the coolest, prettiest, funniest, loudest, most creative blabbermouth in the universe, and saying I was just like her must have meant that I was something pretty special. At the time, the only real downside was just that I didn't get to see her as much as I wanted to. My parents split up when I was a toddler, and although I'd initially gone with my mom for a few months and my older brother went with my dad, for one reason or another that's not super clear to me right now, a few months later I ended up back with my dad, and I went on to live with my dad all the way to college. When I left home for good. The most I saw of her were in the years where she lived close enough to visit, and there were times where we would even spend every other weekend with her and also go visit her for a few weeks in the summer. I remember one time when I was in probably first grade, I spent the weekend with her at my grandma's house, and she did this drawing of Wolverine in Sharpie on my X-Men trading card binder, and I was just absolutely obsessed. Like Monday morning, first thing, I was a talk of the class, all my friends gathered around, marveling over this picture-perfect Marvel character drawing and being like, whoa, man, your mom is the coolest. And of course, I was quick to remind all of them that supposedly, according to many people, I was just like her. So yeah, draw your own conclusions of what this drawing means about my coolness. On another one of those weekend visits with my mom, around that same time, she excitedly told me she wanted to show me something. I sat down at the dinner table and she brought out this huge stack of papers. They were these detailed pencil sketches, and this stack was a rough draft of a children's book. Every page had a different, weird, and hilarious character, one for each letter of the alphabet, paired with a silly rhyme and alliteration. I can't remember specifically what they were called or the exact rhymes, but I can still hear her voice in that dramatic, playful reading of this book in my head. I can't remember exactly what she said about the book, but she indicated that this book was officially in the works. She'd been talking with or exploring publishers, and on Monday, I went to school, and during story time, I raised my hand in front of the whole class and told my second grade teacher that pretty soon, very soon, we could read my mom's hilarious kids book. I was so proud. Now, spoiler alert, that day didn't actually come, and more on why that is later. But at the time, I felt like if someone like my mom could write a kid's book, maybe other fun weirdos already had, and maybe that meant there might be books out there for kids like me. And I remember these super formative book experiences, like begging my stepmom after school one day to find this Ed Emberley book called Go Away Green Monster that felt meta. I didn't say that at the time, but I think that's kind of why I liked it. And then later sending my mom on a massive hunt to find a book I'd read at school that had changed my life. The only problem is I couldn't remember what the book was, and it took us forever to find it. But she indulged me, probably sympathizing because her memory was also quite poor. And we finally found it that summer right before I went back to my dad's. In hindsight, the wild goose chase felt appropriate because this book was John Sheska's and Lane Smith's Stinky Cheese Man, a wild mother goose parody of classic fairy tales like Gingerbread Man and Jack and the Beanstalk. These books gave me permission to be my goofiest self and ignited the creative spark to draw and tell my own stories. In grade school, being the kid who can draw the best, make the weirdest faces, and crush show and tell means you're basically star student. But as I got older, I was quickly informed that the show and tell credits don't really transfer to middle school, and they mean more or less jack shit in high school. By the time I was a preteen, my relationship to my mom started to feel a little bit more complicated. I saw her less and less, but the encounters we did have still made me love her more and more. These were usually brief encounters and interactions around holidays and birthdays. I remember going out for dinner at this Mexican restaurant one time, and while we're eating chips and salsa, just getting started out, she blurted out, "I need to go potty." And I was embarrassed, and I was trying to be cool, and I instantly gave her a bunch of crap for it. I was like, "Hey, your two younger kids aren't even here. You're with me, sat with a near teenager. Hello, we don't talk about potties." And in response, she slammed the table and died with laughing, snorting, making a huge scene, yelling, "Okay, I'm just gonna go to the potty," in a dumb kid's voice. And of course, she broke through my cool, won me over with her propensity for ramping up public weirdness and fun. And I vaguely remember later even faking a bathroom run of my own just to have a callback opportunity, and the hilarity ensued all over again. We were quite a rowdy pair. It was awesome. I don't know if I can totally even explain it, like maybe you just had to be there, but I think if you had been there, you'd feel what most people feel around my mom in those rare occasions when she was actually around. Then I remember this one time that she came to take me out to lunch for my 13th birthday. We went to Taco Bell. Even now, sometimes I will send her like a meal on Mother's Day or something and ask her what she wants, and she asked for Taco Bell. She brought me back to school that day, and I opened my birthday present in front of all my friends. I was super excited. And when I opened it up, I saw that it was something that I had never asked for. It was a microphone. And at the time, I initially didn't know why she'd bought me this. And I must have been showing it because I must have been looking a little bit underwhelmed or something, because she felt the need to explain herself. And she said that she didn't know why, but she just saw me doing radio in my future. At 13, I didn't quite see it. But even though I'd barely seen her, only on occasional weekends and holidays at best, she'd seen me better than anyone had seen me in my life. This gift that she got me showed me that she got me better than I even got myself. And at 38, after 10 years of blabbering into this microphone, making this podcast, it just hits different. Because now I more or less do show and tell for a living.
Hello, this is Andy J. Miller,
and you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. So, of course, I'm not currently speaking into the microphone that my mom gave me when I was 13, but a microphone is still a symbol that feels timelessly me. Sure, it represents the physical gift that she gave me, but she also gave me the gift of gab through the DNA that I inherited from her. Personal symbols like this have helped me translate my understanding of who I am from something vague to something I can hold on to literally and figuratively. So it's time for the CTA, your creative call to adventure. We try to give you a method for putting these ideas that we've discussed in the episode into practice, into your creative practice immediately. Today's CTA is past and future matching tats. When I was starting out trying to see myself beyond the ways I had masked and become something palatable for others, I went back through my childhood and dug into what I was before I even knew what cool was. It really helped me push beyond persona and into something more timeless about myself. An idea that has helped me crystallize this from an abstract principle to something more creative that is an exercise is something I call matching tats. So here's the prompt. Design an imaginary tattoo that you would love right now, that you would wear today, assuming you're a tattoo person, that's also something that your 10-year-old self would proudly sport. Hopefully, like, as a temporary tattoo, because we don't need to be given 10-year-olds tattoos. But here's what's powerful about this idea for me. The taste you have in common with your childhood self is unlikely to ever change. It means your 90-year-old self would almost certainly be just as stoked about flaunting that ink. I can see him now. I might be 90, but I'm still flaunting. This is an ongoing conversation that I've had with my wife, Sophie, who is also an artist and is looking to authentically put herself into her art.
Please.
Sorry. Okay. So you were going to come in here, and we were talking about this prompt from a couple different angles, and I was listening to how you were internalizing it, and I thought, you should just say your side, because it's the same principle, but it manifests in a really different way for you than it does for me. So do you want to just, Sophie, do you want to just tell people what your matching tat would be?
Okay. I think for me it would be, so first of all, I probably wouldn't get a tattoo. I don't know, like there's different reasons why. Like I'm a wuss, I don't like needles, and a bit of a purist about the, I don't know.
They're just not very you.
They're not me for some reason, but I do like other people having them. I like, I don't know, whatever. But I think for the sake of the exercise, which I like, a blackberry came to mind.
Yeah.
I think like just to sort of backtrack as to how I got there, like, you know, as we've gone through writing Right Side Out, I have kind of gone through the process in my mind to make sure that it made sense to me.
Yeah.
Especially as someone in a different place and coming from a different angle. So I do feel like I'm at a point in my life where I'm trying to kind of figure out who am I again and like, what am I supposed to do with my life? I think my reasons are different. There is some masking. I think I learned to mask for different reasons, like we all do. I think part of that came from moving from one country to another. I moved from the UK to the US, and you kind of, like, at first I was just like, I'm going to be me and everyone will meet me. Yeah. And it, you know, we moved to Midwest Indiana. It's not that simple, like small town. Like, there were definitely ways I had to kind of like tone myself down and figure out what had traveled well. And I think some of my personality was my culture.
Yeah.
And you can't escape your culture until you literally are taken from it. And some of those things made me feel too much like an alien.
Yeah.
And in that season of, I really just wanted to fit in.
I think that it's a good point. Like, taking you out of culture is another layer of masks that I haven't really addressed in the process.
Yeah.
And also, it's not always just about, like you said, it's not just about feeling like an alien, but you do feel like an outsider.
Yeah.
But it's also just like, I remember in England starting to say tomato just so that I wouldn't get paused.
Exactly.
Have to have that conversation for the 8,000th time.
I think, you know, this has been a theme for, and I've like written down stories about this, like, you get a lot of attention when you have an accent, when you're from a different country. And I think when you're visiting somewhere, that's kind of cool. Like, you kind of, it feels special to you too, but this is my real life. And
yeah.
So on a weekly basis, for people to make fun of how I said something, or even worse, to literally not know what I was talking about,
yeah.
and I'd said it five times, really made me feel other in a way that, like, you just start naturally rounding yourself out,
yeah.
just to get over that constant hurdle that is just repetitive. I also think, like, for me, there's a theme of motherhood. You know, I was a mom at 21.
Yeah.
And barely even really thought about who I was as an adult. And then I was a mom. And, you know, I think there are a lot of ways that when you become responsible for someone else who's really high maintenance, which she was, you just...
Was is a liberal term.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. when you're doing that, when you're responsible for somebody else, there's just lots of ways that you have to pause on your own needs. You know, you put your own feelings aside to be stable for them and to focus on them. And so there was a lot of fast growing up and a lot of fast minimizing. I didn't have time to think about who I was or who I was going to be for quite a long time. So I think at this point, when I'm kind of past that most intensive season, is when I've been doing the work of rediscovering myself. And I think that as we've gone through this, and I thought about this particular week, looking back at childhood, and obviously, like, I think we had pretty different upbringings, you know, different sides of the world, different family dynamics, very different culture. And I think that it's really good to look back because you see, you know, you do see you, the true you.
Yeah.
And I think about you thinking about your parents and similar traits you may have. And I see it in my parents, like, and I see, like, both my parents are very, like, hands-on maker types. Like, my mom, it will kind of come out in cooking and, you know, maybe even some kind of home choices. Like, she's pretty bold. She's not afraid.
Yeah.
She's not afraid to just do her thing and
yeah.
to figure something out. And I love that about her. And I sometimes get in my head and forget that I have that in me. I know I do. I used to be more like that. And then my dad also is just this, just not afraid to just get stuck in and build something. Like, you know, he built me a doll's house. He he built me a rabbit hutch when I wanted rabbits. Like, he built me a full size aquarium when I decided that's what I needed in my bedroom. Like, he even added stilts to my bed when I wanted my bed to be a, what do you call it? A
loft bed.
A loft bed.
Yeah.
I wanted a loft bed. So he added legs to my bed. Yeah. I can't imagine how confident you would have to be to
do that. You would not put your kids in a loft bed that I had thrown together.
I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. No. So, you know, that's what they will like. Like, my mom made my brother's wedding cake, and she's not a professional baker. Like, they're just professional hobbyists. She does make
the best cakes I've ever had.
I know. I'll say they just go all in on things that they like to do, and they're not afraid to make. And so that's a theme I saw in my childhood that I was like, I need to refine that confidence in myself. I think another thing from childhood that I feel really nostalgic about is, like, we would, a lot of times on a Sunday, we would get up early, and me and my mom and my nan, we would go to car boot sales. And they're kind of like, they still exist in America. And if I was a different kind of person, maybe I would set one up, because I'm like, this is a gap.
Yeah, they're fun.
But it's basically like some kind of parking lot, and everyone drives her in their cars, parks their cars, and sets up like a temporary, it's kind of like trunk or treat, set up like a temporary display and sells their crap.
Yeah.
So it's a yard sale, but on neutral ground, you know, and you can go and look around like 50 people's stuff instead of having to drive to different people's houses, like in America.
Yeah.
So we'd go park and we would walk around this parking lot of people's cars. And like, I did it so many times that like I had this like skill of like just being able to train my eye to sort of scan hundreds and hundreds of things, like looking for some kind of treasure. And I was trying to think about, well, what was treasure for me when I was doing that? And I don't even know. Like, it was, I don't know, costume jewelry or like a book that looked cool, maybe some vintage fabric. Like, I don't know. I was, who knows? Some kind of treasure. You don't know
what stuff you don't know what you're looking
you
for.
You do not know what you need. Like, you just find it. But they would kind of move faster than me. So like, I had to kind of learn to scan.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And it was like, I couldn't stop. And I think that's the first time I can remember that thing in me of like, I could do this forever. Like, this is like, I've become a robot for treasure hunting. And it's cool because I still do it. Like, I most recently, we would go on hikes, and I started looking. I once saw this amazing fungi, and I've told the story before, but I realized it was the same exact thing where like I started looking for fungi to an obsessive escapism type degree, where I realized an hour's passed and I've been looking for fungi for an hour.
Yeah.
Like, just very kind of robotic, regular, and just fun treasure seeking.
It makes me feel like a robot pirate treasure hunter.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that's a story.
Maybe you can write it.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to write it. I don't know. I don't have a pirate spirit, though.
No. You have a more like pirate, or more like a robot Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I don't fully embrace robot as personality, so let's just, you know, put a pin in that. Okay. But so with the reason that I got to a BlackBerry was another example that kind of tied together all of this kind of maker gardener that I got from my parents, and also this treasure hunting kind of hyper focus. Was I thought about in childhood, we'd go down by the canals and we would have like empty ice cream tubs, and we would pick blackberries with my parents and my grandma. And this is not my car boot grandma, that's Nan. This is my other grandma, and she was the blackberry grandma. And we would kind of like get super into it, and we would do it all day. And you kind of get to like trusting your intuition again. Like, it's not necessarily scanning the car boot sales, but it is like you kind of get a feel for where a good blackberry bush might be.
Yeah.
And there's always time for like one more, you know, like I was always trying to fit one more blackberry. And I honestly think like I never wanted to stop. And I think I probably would have picked every ripe blackberry in West Yorkshire. You know, if I didn't have family members that were not hyper-focused on this, this was just a task and a fun task that we were doing. And, you know, we would go home like with our fingers dyed purple and we'd have all these bramble scratches, but it was just like, it was all part of it. It was like this fully sensory experience with a treasure hunt. And the best part of it was this particular treasure hunt, my grandma would take further and she would make tarts and jams and jellies and her house would smell so good. And we would just feast on this treasure for months. And it was just a really good, that was just the best example because it was kind of that combination of me being sentimental and treasure hunting, but also having this like this outcome that is connected to practical too. So yeah, I think for me it would be something like that. It's, you know, something rooted in sentiment and definitely natural, something definitely natural. That's a theme for me. Yeah, so that's kind of how I got there. Like, and as you can tell, like, I went through like a process there, yeah. Like, you know, and I, yeah.
It makes tons of sense. It also kind of reminds me of in the last episode, we were talking about how t-shirts are like selves and they're meant to be worn right side out. That's mm-hmm. where the name of this thing comes from. But we talked about the idea of turning yourself inside out like a t-shirt that you're trying to obscure. And even going to the point where you cut out the tags so that you don't have these things sticking out, reminding people how to care for you or where you came from. And I kind of feel like the BlackBerry or the microphone for me are those tags. They're like these visual reminders that you can tap into and remind yourself, like, this is where I came from. This is who I am.
Yes.
And I feel like the BlackBerry definitely makes sense based on your stories that I've heard you tell.
And I like that it feels unique to place because obviously, like, place is a big theme. For me in my work is kind of this big change of place was formative. And so, yeah, I think thinking about where the BlackBerries grew is a great – and the person who back then was picking them is just a really nice way to –
I feel like that's another story where the blackberries grow.
I know. It's like where the wild things are, but my version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you do all these landscapes and everything. So place, you know, when we're talking about people, places and things, places for you really make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
So if I was actually getting this as a tattoo, my taste would be a little bit different than what I might wear as a shirt or hang as a poster. An actual matching tat that I could see my 10-year-old self and 90-year-old self all sporting would probably be like a simple-looking king cobra or a cool skull doodle or something spacey or trippy or sad. Maybe something connected to classic symbolism and storytelling and something cool and perhaps a little dark. Which is just like the two tattoos that I actually have. One is a bird made out of stars, and it's supposed to be like a starling. And that one feels like it's about the universe and oneness. And my melancholy character that has a little umbrella, and he's kind of bittersweet, happy, and sad. These tats are both ones that I strongly believe that my 10-year-old self would dig, as well as something that taps into some true blue through line that's a timeless part of myself and the kind of space that I want to be creating from. Throughout the series, we're going to talk about personal symbols and archetypes, people, places, and things, nouns, things that hold something powerfully meaningful to our identity that you could actually hold because they're physical objects. This exercise is meant to help you start collecting these things and putting them into your work. If you feel a bit stumped as you start warming up, you can first try doing this exercise with your favorite musicians or artists and filmmakers in mind. For example, when I go to interview my favorite creative heroes in this podcast, I often find myself trying to pick out the lyrics or the images, the pictures, the symbols that show up time and time again in that person's work. So if you're getting a little bit stuck, instead of starting with you, start with some of the people whose work you just love, and that might get you into the swing of it. So let's pivot back a little bit. So in the last episode, you heard that a little over a year ago, from the prompting of a fellow Gift of Gab podcaster and real radio personality, Lulu Miller, I decided to turn the microphone back onto my mom. On January 19th, 2023, I took this creative call to adventure beyond a thought experiment and into an actual 3-hour car journey to go visit my mom, travel back in time, and ask her some questions about her own experience back then, and to find a few more puzzle pieces of who I am and where I come from.
All right, so I'm driving to see my mom for the first time in a few years. And I had a friend of mine who's in podcasting and radio just graciously give me some notes on some of the stuff that I've been developing for this series. And they said, you know, it would be great. Like, they're like, we don't, you know, I don't know the context of your relationship with your mom. I don't know if this is realistic or a good thing, but it'd be really good if you could go, if you could get some tape from your mom, because that would just make a lot of sense, and it also might be healing for you, even if you don't use it. It might be a good thing to have recorded. And yeah, so I'm on my way to have that conversation, and my plan is to let her watch a talk I gave that tells a part of the story, and then just kind of open up the dialogue. I don't have a really tight plan, which is not unlike, or is not like me for a quote-unquote interview, so you know, that I'm a little bit worried about that, but obviously I'm a lot more worried about just being a boy about to see his mom, who he hasn't seen in a few years, and have the conversation, you know. I think it's the kind of conversation that you want to have had with people before they're gone. And so that's kind of what this is. And so I'm nervous. I'm a bit scared. I haven't been to her house in a long time.
Give me a reason to come there. Give me a reason, I'll leave right now. Give me a reason to come there.
I don't really know what to expect.
So it might not seem obvious right now why I haven't seen my mom in years and why she's not really in my life, even though she just lives a few hours away. But next week, we'll dive into why, as crazy about my mom as I was when I was a kid, these three words, just like her, eventually felt less like a gift that kept on giving and more like a curse that I couldn't escape.
Does the birthday boy have any comments to make to everybody? I mean, is he happy? Still
frowning like a founding father on a dollar. Orientally vitriolic.
Sour.
Notes down to the tonic.
Now.
Matched with panic language. You take more damage from the rash caused by the band.
Hey, I forgot to tell you last week, I have an enamel pin that was inspired by the pizza shirt story I told in the last episode. It's available in the shop. It's a little pizza with mushrooms that look like skulls. I designed this as a reminder to myself to live right side out. If you want to support the show and this series and wear this pin as a reminder for yourself to live right side out, go to creativepeptalk.etsy.com. And you can find it, among other things, in the shop. Major thanks to editor and co-producer of this series, my wife, Sophie Miller. Huge thanks to my brother, Josh, for chatting about this stuff and letting us use a clip of that. Thanks to Connor Jones of Pending Beautiful for sound design and audio editing. Huge thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for the regular theme music and soundtrack of the show, as well as the new Right Side Out theme music and soundtrack. If you like the music in this show, I highly recommend checking them out. Check out the songs The Reason and Rock Candy from their album A-OK Ohio, which were featured pretty prominently in this episode. The band Y is definitely a through line from my past self all the way back to college and into today, and I imagine my 90-year-old self would be pretty stoked about them as well. Thanks for all of your time and attention listening to this series, and until we speak again, stay pepped up.